The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
You're listening to the Best Morning Routine Ever podcast, the show that proves no one stumbles upon success ever. With your host, Lou Mead. Every Mondays and Thursdays, we deliver cold hard evidence behind the power of a robust morning routine. Get ready to be transformed by the renewal of your mind.
Thank you for coming on the show today.
Thank you for having me.
My pleasure. I'm looking forward to hearing all about what you do and how you teach kids with autism and augmentative alternative communication.
All right. Well, and in keeping with the theme, I think it's really important that people know that the routines that they have with their kids are really, really important for developing language. Parents don't realize that, but routines, the things they do every day with their children, are really key for developing communication skills. We say the same things, we do the same things in order, we have them in the same sequence, and so it provides children with predictability and comprehension of language. And one of the best and overlooked times to explicitly build language skills is in the context of our daily routines. They're really the heart of language development. They are sequences of actions or events that are repeated over and over, always in the same sequence. They're reliable, they're consistent, and we can give kids consistent language targets to build on. So,
I know you've been doing this for over 40 years. You have experience with SLP, and you have your bachelor's in psychology, you have your master's in pathology, and MED in education.
Yes.
And so fill us in on some of the sequence of action, some of the events that are repetitive that you do regularly.
Okay, sure. So with children, frequently in the morning is about brushing their teeth or washing their face, getting dressed, having breakfast. And so when you think about a young child and you're teaching him to wash his hands and you have him turn the water on, is it too hot? Is it too cold? Get yourself wet, get the soap, rub your hands together, make bubbles, rinse, turn the water off. We say it, same order every time. You do the same thing over and over. And so kids learn what's coming. And not only does that teach them how to wash their hands, but it also teaches them what all those words are. You know, wet, dry, wipe, rub, soap, you know, even the nouns, all of those are words that kids need to learn. And they're important for their everyday living.
And cognitive development.
Exactly.
It's happening simultaneously.
Exactly. And so how many times a day do you tell your kids to wash their hands or their face? How often do you tell them to brush their teeth? And you go through those routines. And that language is what kids start to build their comprehension on. Mm-hmm. Children actually need to hear a word hundreds of times before it's lodged in their vocabulary.
And it shouldn't be no.
Yeah. Right. And so hearing the same words in the same order and gaining that understanding also then gets them to be able to learn how to use it and use them in the same time. And eventually you see them standing there talking to themselves if they're verbal. Turn it on. It's hot. Turn it down. Rinse, dry. And if they're not verbal, they may be doing that in their heads, but they might not be if they haven't developed all that language yet. And so we build on those routines. And what I do with kids who are not verbal is to add pictures to those routines. And so you point to the picture of a child putting his hand under the water. and you say the words, get wet. And he equates the picture with what you're saying, with what he's doing, and starts to learn language. For kids who aren't verbal and have to use pictures to communicate, it's a whole other language. And if all they ever hear is us talking to them, they might not learn how to use that language. They need to use pictures. So we teach them, we add the pictures into those routines when we're talking. And that's how language happens. And parents don't realize how huge that is to their child's development. And they're not aware that they're teaching them more than just how to wash their hands. They're giving them all those language skills. So it's really exciting.
Very interesting. And then going off with the repetitiveness, like that, yes, that you need that. It's
exactly.
That's necessary. And I know for kids with, on the spectrum with autism, their social skills or they have social skills issues where they're mostly flat affect.
Yes.
And so
often.
How do you teach along with the language, teach social skills?
Well, that's a whole sort of other branch of getting them to look at visual cues. And this time they're different visual cues. It's, you know, look at different faces, making the facial expressions that we make, listen to various scenarios. How did you feel at this time? How could you say that? How can you add inflection into your voice? So there's a lot, again, it's all modeling. Everything we do to teach kids to communicate is based on modeling, giving them models. And so whether it's, you know, following a sequence of actions or identifying, I'm angry, this is how people sound when they're angry. Or if I go, that means I'm surprised. And what does my voice do when I'm surprised? And that can be very, very difficult for kids on the spectrum to learn. And not all of them get there. But having them be able to recognize another person's facial expressions and tone of voice is really, really huge for them. And we keep giving them models. We do it in context. We hang out in the classroom or on the playground and point things out to them, ask them, you know, to think about how they feel, how might that person feel? What does that facial expression say about how they're thinking or feeling?
Now, for in-home therapy, initially, if there's a diagnosis, you would go in and do some in-home therapy. How, if you want the to empower the parents, how do you equip them so that once you leave the environment, that the learning continues?
I do a couple of things. One is to train them, to give them as much information as I can in a really simple, easy, step-by-step format. Which is why I ended up writing my book. But, and then I have them watch me when I'm working with their child. So when I do evaluations, when I do intervention, I have the parents there as much as possible so that they can see what I'm doing. They can see how I'm responding. So I'm modeling for them now on how they can act and what they should say and do. So, you know, giving them the knowledge and showing them what kinds of things they can do seems to put it together for them. And we go back and I'll, you know, do as much consultation as it takes. I tend to do a lot of my consulting in schools. Various school districts hire me. And so I always try to invite the parents, make sure the parents can come if they can get out of work to get the training. I go into homes. I will give people handouts. I just, again, as much modeling as I can do for them so that they can see how to do it. And I try and make it really simple. Parents do not need a textbook. They don't need it to be full of professional jargon. They just need simple. Here's what you do. Here's how you do it. Here's why you do it. Go. And so I'm all about trying to give parents that information so that they can be empowered.
They're busy.
Yeah,
they're busy.
They are. And, you know, often they've got more than one child. So if they're working, they've got other kids to take care of, to help with homework, to do all of those other things with. And yes, your special needs child always takes so much more of your time than you ever thought it would or they would. So, So yeah, it needs not to be a burden to them. It needs to be simple and easy. It needs to be, here's how you do it, here's the steps, and go, without it being difficult for them to process. And
yeah, it's absolutely true, because you need the collectivism. You need to work as a unit. You absolutely. As the clinician, you as the psychologist need to work with the parents and with the school, because I did in-home therapy for 3 years after I graduated with my bachelor's in psychology. So I went into the schools and I met with the counselors. We had treatment plans. We had therapeutic sessions, and we had play therapy. All that is incorporated in the healing, the treatment process.
Exactly. And that's what we do in speech therapy as well. We're, we're playing with young children. You know, you want communication to be genuine. We don't need to just teach them rote things, which, too many people did for too long with kids with autism. But it needs to be real. They're not going to communicate with us unless we're giving them the opportunity to talk about things they want to talk about. So we bring out the toys. We look to the things that they like to do. Kids with autism can sometimes be very compulsive about always talking about, Thomas the Tank Engine, or always talking about a certain topic. And dinosaurs are a big one. And for a lot of years, we were told to, to ignore that, to work on something else. And that's absolutely the wrong thing to do. Mm-hmm. Nurture those things that they're interested about, because they'll want to talk about them. That's how to get them to communicate. If you're just giving them, things that they have to say or answers they have to give in school, that's not real for them. That's not going to make them want to talk.
Because they don't want to.
Yeah.
It's what interests them they want to talk about. It's what they're engaging in. They're super smart.
Yeah, we learned. It took us a number of years, but we've gotten there. When I started working with kids with autism back in the early 70s, it was still called childhood schizophrenia. Nobody really knew what it was about. We've learned so much more in the past 40 years, thankfully, and we know a lot better how to teach kids to communicate. And there's a great book called Just Give Him the Whale, which is about a little boy who was interested in whales, and that's all he ever wanted to talk about. And that's okay. Let him talk about what he wants to, because that's what's going to motivate him.
And that's engagement right there. That's, again, working on social cues and social skills simultaneously.
Exactly.
Tell us about your book.
Okay. Well, my book, the working title was originally Parents and Professionals in Partnership, because parents do too often get left out of the equation. Mm-hmm. They don't always get told everything they need from the schools, or they don't get invited to the trainings. It might be that the speech therapist who's working with their child doesn't know anything about alternative communication modes. It's not required in graduate school. It might be something they haven't learned. And so I wanted to come up with a way that was easily digestible, simple to read, a roadmap, step-by-step directions that both parents and teachers or speech therapists who don't know as much about this topic can all follow easily. They didn't want another textbook. They didn't want something that was hard to plow through. It wants to be a no-brainer. And so I wanted to give everybody the power to be on the same page, to know exactly what to do and how to do it. And I hope that's what I've done with the book.
Yeah, it's a good way to get parents involved and engage in
Absolutely.
The treatment process.
Absolutely.
And I think that's the ultimate goal. So go ahead and tell us about your morning routine. What is it? How do you get up and prepare? You've been working for 40 years with, particularly with kids, not with nonverbal kids. You know, they say every psychologist needs a psychologist.
Oh, yeah.
So how is it that in the morning, what do you do in the morning to actually prep you so that you are your best self? Because you need to be your best self to serve these kids.
It's changed a lot over the years. My kids are finally grown. I had my own child with special needs to deal with in the mornings that made life a little hairy sometimes. And we'd go flying out the door by the seat of our pants. Nowadays, of course, it's a lot easier and I can get up and only have to take care of myself, which does make life easier. And so I try not to rush myself. I try and give myself plenty of time. I make sure that, you know, I have a good breakfast after skipping breakfast for years and years. I even grab my coffee, decaf. I'm not allowed to have caffeine, but just those, you know, those little things. I make sure I'm wearing clothes that are comfortable, that I feel comfortable in that day, because that helps. It's, you know, just like our sensory processing disorder kids get antsy if the clothes are scratchy or stiff or there's a tag. We adults do too. And so I try and do what I can to make myself be comfortable for the rest of the day. And that's the biggest thing, that and not leaving the house without petting at least one of the cats.
They are therapeutic.
Bring down the blood pressure.
Yes. Just the human connection.
Yes.
Human to pet connection. Their warm bodies just help you connect. I can't even find the words. Help you connect.
Yeah, absolutely. And they are shown to make you healthier and reduce your blood pressure. And so I make sure that I get that before I leave in the morning.
Get that serotonin flowing and from that method early in the morning.
Absolutely.
It's actually the norm. A lot of the entrepreneurs I talk to, it's a thing. It's part of their morning routine is petting their pets.
Yeah. And I think a lot of us, particularly moms of kids with special needs, spend a lot of time ignoring our own needs, not taking care of ourselves because we're busy taking care of our kids who take extra time and the rest of the family and work. And I think we forget about that. And it really is important to take care of yourself and to nurture yourself too. At 60 something years old, I've discovered I should have done it sooner.
The act of self-care, because you're servant at heart, you know, giving, but you too need to be fed.
Exactly.
So how are you being fed? How are you being cared for? And sometimes it comes down to you taking care of you and the importance, because if you are not healthy or well mentally, you are no good to the kids. You are no good to anyone else.
Exactly. And I like that I'm seeing more of an emphasis these days for both mothers and entrepreneurs in general for self-care. And people realizing that at a younger age, because it really is important.
That's essentially what the morning routine is all about.
Exactly. Exactly.
How do you take care of yourself in the morning before you welcome in the world?
Exactly. The other thing that parents can do, mornings might be a hard time for it, but if you've got a minute, read something to your child, even if it's just reading the side of the cereal box or pointing something out in the newspaper. Reading to your children is one of the most important routines of every day. Every child should be read to at least 15 minutes every day. And again, if the only time you've got in your schedule to do that is the cereal box in the morning, go for it. That's really important.
Oh, yeah, the importance of cognitively enhancing and reading and them listening, their picture and their imagining, their brains, the nuggets, the churning.
It is. You know, it learning. Is. And with our nonverbal kids, we don't always know just how much they're taking in. But I can assure you they're taking in more than many of us think so.
Yeah, absolutely. This was over 40 years of knowledge right here. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Susan, that was spectacular. I really love that because there is an audience. There are people, there are parents who are struggling, who are dealing with this, and they don't know how to approach it.
There are. And there's just not enough. You know, there's more information now with the internet, but there's still not enough. And it's not always easy to find. And sometimes it's contradictory. And parents are just so frustrated that I wanted to make that better for them.
Absolutely. Tell us, how can we connect with you?
I do have a blog, which is kids with a Z, learn language at blogspot.com. I also have a website, susanberkowitz.net. And the book has its own website, which is maketheconnectionbook.com. and you can get more information there. I try and give lots of free advice and free materials and tips in my blog so that there's always something that you can learn, and it's free.
Thank you for sharing. I love what you said about the routine giving the kids some predictability.
Yeah.
And it works the same for adults. It's like you
Absolutely.
Don't have to guess what's coming.
Right. And with kids who are nonverbal, they can be very, very anxious because they don't understand what's going on, or they don't know what's coming. They can't voice their fears. And so that anxiety is huge. And having things be predictable and routine is really key.
Yeah, the sequence of action and then doing it over and over again, day in and day out, so that it becomes the routine. It becomes part of their life.
Yeah, they really need
it's
that.
It's ingrained. I love what you said about social skills and how to do inflections and actually engage your whole body.
Mm-hmm.
Engage your whole face, your whole emotion, every sense that you can to actually model
right.
what you're looking to get.
Back. Yeah. And for some kids, when the facial expressions are too subtle, they just don't read them. If we exaggerate and we make it big and we give lots of different facial expressions, different people doing them, that helps a lot.
Awesome. I want to thank you so much, Susan, for coming on the show.
I hope it helps somebody.
All right, morning enthusiasts. That's it for today's show. Thank you for tuning in. If you love the Best Morning Routine Ever podcast, we'd love to hear from you. So go ahead and subscribe, rate, and give a review on iTunes or Google Play. While you're at it, tell a friend about the show. Be sure to visit bestmorningroutineever.com and our Facebook group to join the conversation, access the show notes, and discover our fantastic free bonus content. Until next time.